Okay, so I'd like to tell you about a paper I wrote recently. This is the number on the net, and it's got several authors. The second of these M stands for Liam McAllister, who's here in the audience, and is a student of Shamit Kachru's, who I think will be finishing soon at Stanford. The others are Kachru, Kalosh, Linde, and Maldacena, and most of them are in the audience here. In fact, out of the six co-authors, five are in one room at the same time, I think, for the first time, I mean, since this project actually got going, thanks to the internet age. So they will field all the difficult questions for me. Okay, what I would like to tell you about today is a proposal for getting inflation, conventional slow roll inflation, in string theory. And this proposal involves taking brains and putting them in a suitable warp background and then studying their dynamics. So what I'd like to do is first start by reminding you about some of the issues to keep in mind when we think about inflation. Then I'll tell you about this idea of putting brains in warp backgrounds, and it has a few quite promising aspects to it. So I'll tell you about the promising aspects first, but then we will try to really implement the idea in string theory, and that will lead us to think about all the other moduli in the problem, especially the volume modulus, and we will find that when we try to stabilize that modulus in a particular way, in fact, things start to go sour in that the stabilization mechanism gives rise to too big a mass for the inflaton field. Okay. I'll end with some conclusions where we will ask, possibly, can there be non-generic situations where the mass can be small, and related comments. Okay, all throughout, M10 will stand for the 10-dimensional Planck scale, M-Planck for the 4-dimensional Planck scale. Now, before I start, I should give you at least a few references, and my apologies in advance to all of you here and across the globe, who I will be offending instantly. The first paper on brain inflation, I believe, was by Diwali and Tai. Here are some more references. A good review, if you want to read about this, is by Quevedo. When I come to the string implementation, I will work in a framework of type 2B string theory with fluxes that was nicely spelt out in this paper of Giddings, Kachru, and Polchinski. And I will use all throughout for the stabilization mechanism and so on the ideas in the paper by Kachru, Kalosh, Linde, and myself. Okay, and again, apologies if I've left many of you out, which I'm sure I have. So what's the basic idea of inflation? The idea is that inflation refers to an epoch of exponential expansion in the early universe, and the idea is that we have a scalar field called the inflaton, which has a potential which is positive and which slopes very slowly. So to first approximation, we can take this potential to be constant, and as a result, we get the exponential expansion of De Sitter space. Eventually, though, because of the slope, the scalar field transits this region of field space and reaches its minimum, which is hopefully close to zero, but in vacuum energy, and inflation ends. Okay. Now the requirement that the potential slope slowly can be quantified in terms of two slow roll parameters, epsilon and eta. Eta in particular will be important for us. It will place stringent control restrictions requiring that that eta is small will place stringent restrictions, and it is V double prime over V times M Planck square. So basically, it's the mass divided by the overall scale of the potential in Planck units. Okay, and I should say here that it's important that the scalar field in this derivatives, we are dealing with the canonically normalized scalar field. So these have to be small. Canonical value people use for the number of E-foldings is about 60. Finally, one very nice feature about inflation, as we all know, is that it provides a mechanism to generate density perturbations. And the observed constraints tell us that these perturbations must be small, of order 10 to the minus 5, and this often puts a very stringent constraint on the required potential. Now, these are not the only issues to worry about. One should also worry about how inflation ends, the question of reheating and so on, and how it began. If the inflation scale is considerably lower than the Planck scale, how did the universe survive till the point where inflation could begin? And why were the initial conditions right, and so on? These are not questions that I will focus on in this talk. Rather, I will simply ask, in string theory, and in this, in fact, particular framework of brains in a warped background, can we get a slowly varying potential that meets these requirements, which could support inflation? Okay, so that will be my primary focus. Okay, so now at first sight, it might seem that inflation should be easy to achieve in string theory because there are several moduli fields which are flat directions into leading order. And you might think you can lift them a little bit and get a slowly varying potential, but actually when you try it, you find typically that the potential you get for these moduli fields is varying too rapidly. And here's an example. Some non-perturbative effect, for example, might give you a potential for the dilaton, but it would go like, say, e to the minus 1 upon g string square or e to the minus 1 upon g string. And in terms of the canonically normalized field, that's e to the minus 2 phi dependence, which is very rapid. Other times you don't have to get such a rapid dependence, but it's still too rapid to support inflation. There's another problem too, which is if you really want to do things with control in string theory, typically there are many moduli in the problem. Okay, and so it's not enough to just focus on one direction and ensure that the potential is slowly enough varying. You have to make sure there is no other direction in field space where the potential is decreasing too rapidly. Because if that's the case, you will tend to fall down along that direction, and that will ruin inflation. And this is hard to do because you just in terms of tractability, because you have to have the control, you have to control the potential in moduli space adequately to be able to analyze all directions and so on.
I'm sorry, that sounds exactly backwards to me. I would have thought that you float someplace where you're in a valley and there are no steep directions, and then inflation could happen.
Okay, well, if it's true that that might be one way in which it happens, but all I mean is every time you transit, you're transiting through very, very steep directions, then you're not going to get the required expansion. You'll just very quickly tumble down to a minimum. So there are more complicated scenarios in which partly you tumble down very quickly and then you hit flat sections. You need to hit enough flat sections in the course of your rolling down. That's all I really meant. Although I want to think about brains in a warped background, let's first start by thinking about what happens if we do not have a warped background. Okay, so here's a simple situation. As you know, there are six extra internal directions in string theory. Let's take them to be a six torus, each of whose sides has length L, and we take a three-brain and anti-three-brain in this compactification. So these fill the three non-compact directions and are therefore points in the six torus. Okay, and let's suppose that their separation is R. So what happens? Do we get the required potential we need? Well, here is what the potential is. The leading term is just twice the tension. Both of them have the same tension, which I call T3. And then there's an interaction term which arises because of gravitational attraction, and also it turns out electrostatic attraction because these are charged. And this term goes like the square of the tension. It falls like r to the 4 because that's the correct fall off for Coulomb's law in six dimensions and has the required dependence just from dimensional analysis on M10. Okay, so that's the potential. Here's the full Lagrangian with the kinetic energy term. And you see from here that the canonically normalized field is phi, which is square root of T3 times R. So now given this potential and the canonically normalized field, we can calculate, say, eta, the slow roll parameter. It goes like, since it's V double prime over V, the overall scale drops out. It goes like the tension and r to the 6 because of two derivatives. There's an extra T3 because of the normalization. And finally, there's m Planck square. We need to relate the two Planck scales here. And the relation is that the four-dimensional Planck scale square is the volume times the 10-dimensional one, like this. You put that in, and you find that eta goes like l to the 6 over r to the 6. OK, this r to the 6 and the l to the 6 just from m Planck square. So we can ask, can eta be made very small? You see that to make eta small, little r has to be bigger than L. And that's, of course, not possible because the brain and antebrain can at best be separated by the size of the torus. So you see that this doesn't work. We don't get a slowly enough varying potential. Okay, now in fact there is another problem with this potential, which is the following. When I gave you the formula before in the previous transparency, I was actually working in the string frame. But if I wrote down the potential in four-dimensional Einstein frame, the first term itself, the tension term, would actually depend on the volume. Now, the Einstein frame is convenient because that allows us to disentangle gravitational fluctuations from those of other scalar fields. And so you see right away that the leading term itself is actually a potential for the volume modulus. Okay? And this modulus must also enter the story besides the brain-anti-brain separation. And in fact, it's a steeply varying function because it turns out that the canonically normalized field is related to L, the size of the torus, through an exponential relation. Turns out to be too steep to allow for inflation. Okay? So this is the kind of problem I referred to earlier. We need to keep all the various moduli which are relevant in the game and think about them if you want to control things honestly. Okay, now I'd like to go on to the case of warped backgrounds. And what we'll first do is try to ask, can we get the potential to be slowly enough varying just as far as the brain-anti-brain separation is concerned? Okay? So I won't worry about the volume modulus first. And there we'll see we can do quite well. And then I'll come back in the third part of the talk and ask what happens to the other moduli. So what's a warped background? Since this is a slightly mixed, somewhat mixed audience, let me give you an example. A good example is five-dimensional anti-de-Sitter space. In string theory, we have 10 dimensions, so there are five more. We can take that to be a five-sphere. The exact form of this is not very important for anything I'll talk about. Here is the metric of five-dimensional anti-de-Sitter space. X parallel are the 3 plus 1 dimensional coordinates, which are non-compact. And this is the extra direction, which I'll call the radial direction. You see that the metric components along the non-compact directions depend on little r, the radial direction, okay, the extra direction, which is present here. And that's a feature of warped spacetimes. Capital R, which enters in this metric, is the scale of the ADS space. It determines the curvature of the spacetime. Now, pretty much the only thing you need to know about this spacetime is that gravity exerts a pull for any object in this spacetime, and the pull of gravity is towards small r, okay? And that's because of this warp nature. So you can think of it as follows: there's a gravitational well, and the gravitational well gets deeper as you go towards smaller radial location. Okay. One way to say that is in terms of photons. If you started with photons which have some fixed intrinsic frequency, then you find that the photon starts off deeper and deeper down this well, smaller and smaller values of r, it gets more and more redshifted because it has to work harder to make its way out of this gravitational well. Okay. Now, actually, what I will need to consider is not quite five-dimensional anti-de-Sitter space, but in fact, a space-time in which this radial direction is cut off both for large r and for small r. Okay, people will recognize that this is related closely to Randall-Sundram 1, I believe it's called, which has two brains in it. In particular, I will denote by r naught the smallest value of the radial coordinate, and the redshift at this location will be related to r naught over capital R. Okay. Okay, so that's our space-time, and we'll come back to how to realize this in string theory. Now, at first sight, it might seem that this is not a good modification to make if we want to have a small force on a brain, because just the pull of gravity itself, even before we introduce the anti-brain, as I said, exerts a pull because of this gravitational well. But it turns out in string theory that, in fact, this geometry is sourced by a five-form field string, okay, and that five-form field strength acts like an electric field on the three-brain. So if you place a three-brain in this background, in the presence of this electric field also, it turns out the two forces exactly cancel. Gravity exerts a pull towards small r, the electric field exerts a repulsive force, and they exactly match so that a three-brain experiences no force at all, which is good news for us. let's now consider what happens if you have a pair of three brain and anti-three brain. Of course, the anti-brain will experience a strong force because both the electric field and gravity will line up for it and will rapidly descend to this location of this, the biggest redshift, the deepest point in the gravitational well where it can minimize its energy. Then the three brain, which will move, and for it, the only force will arise because of the anti-brain. The ambient background, otherwise, as I said, will cancel out. Okay? So we can now ask, in this setup, do we get, what kind of a potential do we get for the three brain? It's very easy. It's a simple calculation to do, and took us a little while to get all the details right. The answer is the following. Okay, it looks exactly like the formula we got before with one crucial difference. Every time, every place we had the tension of the three brain before, it gets changed to the tension redshifted by the redshift at the location of the anti-brain. Okay, by the redshift at the deepest location of this gravitational well. That does two things. It suppresses the overall scale, okay, but it also makes the second term smaller than the first because it appears here also. And that will be crucial in what follows. Again, I remind you, R0 over R is the warp factor of the location of the anti-brain. So let's compute the slow roll parameters, in particular epsilon. Now, it turns out that the canonically normalized field is still square root of T3 times R, so it is not changed by the presence of this warp factor. You can go ahead and then do this calculation. This time, the four-dimensional Planck scale is related to the 10-dimensional one by a factor of the ADS scale to the sixth power. This is the analog of L to the sixth before. And you find that eta goes like R0 over R to the fourth power, the redshift, times R to the sixth over little r to the sixth. This is entirely analogous to what we found earlier, capital L to the sixth over R to the sixth. But you get this extra suppression because you've suppressed this term compared to the leading one. So it turns out here, little r cannot be made smaller than r. That is the analog of the constraint we had earlier. But of course, by suitably taking the redshift to be small enough, you can meet the condition that eta is very small. And similarly for epsilon, in fact, epsilon is a much less stringent condition, epsilon being small. So things look nice. Let's explore the resulting inflationary scenario a little bit and see what it looks like. The scale of the density perturbations you generate can be expressed quite nicely just in terms of this overall scale of the potential and the number of e-foldings. Observationally, this is of about 10 to the minus 5. If I put in for any about 60 e-foldings, by the way, any here refers to the number of e-foldings before the end of inflation. Okay, put that into the about 60, I get the overall scale, which is this, to be about 10 to the 14 GeV. So this is somewhat smaller than the gut scale. The eta parameter turns out to be something like 0.015. Epsilon is much smaller, 10 to the minus 11. The tilt is about 0.97. And if you ask about the anisotropy due to gravity waves, the ratio of that anisotropy to the adiabatic density perturbations is given by epsilon, and so is very small. The other way to say it is that the scale here is small, 10 to the 14 GeV, and that scale directly determines the anisotropy due to gravity waves, and that turns out, therefore, to be small. This is two orders of magnitude smaller than the gut scale, and that gets to be raised to the fourth power, so it's small. Now these parameters are, as I said, quite model independent, and for something like 60 foldings, they're in good agreement with the map data, so things look nice. There's also a potentially nice story with cosmic strings. As you know, there's a problem if the scale of inflation is too high, that if you do produce these cosmic strings, they might cause problems. Here the scale is low, but it's not too low, so there is actually an observationally interesting window. For example, if you look at the D string, if you look at D strings, and let's assume that they do survive, then I pick at random. Then its tension is governed by the overall scale of inflation and the string coupling. If I at random choose the string coupling to be related to alpha electromagnetism for no good reason, it's not a very sensitive dependence, you get the scale to be about 10 to the minus 7, the scale for the tension, which is in an observationally interesting window. So things are quite nice. Is there a stringy implementation of this idea? Yes, in fact, there's quite a natural way to try and implement it, which has to do with a compact version of the Klebanov-Strassler setup. You take type 2B string theory with fluxes on some turned on some Calabi-Yau orientifold or F theory. There are we already talked about the five-form flux, but in addition, we have three forms, F3 and H3, also turned on. If this Calabi-Yau has a conifold singularity in its moduli space, and you can turn on these fluxes to stabilize it close to that singularity, then you have a small S3 in the geometry, a small 3-sphere, which doesn't quite shrink to zero size. If it did, you would have had the singularity, but it shrinks to a small size. And there's a flux which threads this 3-sphere, so in the vicinity of the 3-sphere, the flux is important because the size is shrinking, and that gives rise to a warp geometry. Some of the details are different. So first of all, the warping does stop. Okay, so there is a bottom to this gravitational well, which we will need when we put in the anti-brain. It's going to sit here at the bottom. And certainly, close to the bottom, the geometry is different from the five-dimensional anti-de Sitter one. But if you're away from the bottom in this throat region, up to logarithmic corrections, which are not don't change the story in any significant way, it is anti-de Sitter space. Again, the S5 is replaced by something else, but essentially the same story plays out. One thing we learned from this is that the redshift at the bottom here is related through this exponential relation to integers which parameterize some of the fluxes we turn on. And that's nice because it tells us that by modestly tuning these fluxes, we can get the required small warp factor. Okay, you don't have to put in some absurdly small number to do that. All this can be understood nicely in terms of a dual description. Finally, if you want to, at the end of inflation, match to the sort of scenario we talked about in the KKLT paper, where you might get a small positive cosmological constant, let's say, at the end, you don't want to just have one brain, an anti-brain, which completely annihilate. You might want, say, n anti-D3 brains, and that can easily be put in. It only changes the overall scale of the potential, but essentially, again, the same story is valid. Okay, now this implementation also suggests a generalization of the idea. Namely, you don't necessarily have to have the 3-brain in the throat region. It can also be out here in the Calabi-Yau region where the warping is small. Okay, of course the anti-3-brain always sits at the bottom of the well, but the 3-brain need not. And whether it's here or there, the potential I wrote down is still valid, because the important thing in the potential was that the scale, the tension, was suppressed by the redshift at the location of the anti-brain. Okay, and that's still true. And as long as that redshift is a big one and the scale gets suppressed, we are in the business. Okay. If you wanted a rough cartoon of what we have done here, we actually have two regions. The first one was of the kind I mentioned before, where the warp factor is growing and there's a gravitational pull in this direction. The second one, there is neither a warp factor nor a five-form field strength in some leading approximation. Either way, the 3-brain experiences no force, but for the anti-3-brain here, because the two forces cancel out here because there are none. Okay, so that's the setup. And it looks nice. But now let us ask in more detail about the other moduli in the problem. So what about the other moduli? Well, if you take this type 2B compactification, there are three kinds of moduli. There are complex structure moduli, which you can think of as shape deformations. There are Kähler moduli, which you can think of as size deformations. Especially important for us will be the volume. And then there is the dilaton axion. Now, these can all be actually lifted. By turning on fluxes, we can stabilize the complex structure moduli and the dilaton. And let's, for simplicity, say we have only one Kähler modulus, the volume, then one can evoke non-perturbative effects. For example, Gaugino condensation on a wrapped 7-brain, which would give rise to a superpotential that could lift the volume modulus. So at first sight, it looks encouraging. But let's examine the moduli stabilization mechanism in more detail, especially for the volume. Okay. So here's what it looks like. The superpotential has two parts to it. There's a constant piece which arises because of the fluxes, and then there's a piece which goes like e to the a rho. Rho here is a chiral superfield, and this term arises because of the non-perturbative effects. Now, in the absence of the three brain, this chiral superfield, the real part of this chiral superfield is the volume. Well, as an aside, it's not quite the volume, but it's proportional to it, so I'll just call it the volume. So that's the real part of rho, and then of course the imaginary part is some axion. You can see, therefore, that the superpotential depends on the volume, and so not surprisingly, when you minimize the resulting potential, you fix the volume. Okay? In the presence of the three brain, though, this story changes in an interesting way. It turns out, of course, rho is still a chiral superfield. I want to emphasize that, lest there's any confusion. But it turns out the real part of rho now is no longer just the volume. It's the volume plus some dependence on the inflaton moduli. Okay? In particular, it's the volume plus the Kähler potential for the inflaton the Kähler modulus, which is a function of phi phi bar over 2. Okay? So rho actually now ends up depending both on the volume and on the inflaton. And not surprisingly, then the potential which was stabilizing the volume, actually when we examine it more closely now, depends also on the inflaton and turns out contributes a term to the inflationary potential. You can compute this term. It is a mass term for the inflaton, and the mass of the inflaton turns out to be 1/6 times the curvature. I'm calling it R curve to distinguish it from R ADS here. So this is just the Ricci curvature of the four-dimensional space-time. Okay, and this is too big a mass. It ruins the requirement of it no longer meets the requirements of slow roll inflation. From this mass, we can compute eta, the slow roll parameter, and eta is order 1. Okay, now Well, you know, you get a potential that depends on both the volume and on the inflaton. Okay, and so you have to ask, you're using a particular mechanism to generate that potential, but at the end, that mechanism to which you thought would have only fixed the volume actually gives rise to also a mass term for the inflaton. Now, I have a slide here on why this mixing happens, and let me just very quickly run through it, but I might give more details in private later. Why is it that that the real part of rho is no longer the volume? Well, here's some evidence in support of it. If you believe this identification and you believe the fact that the Kähler potential is now minus 3 log rho plus rho bar minus k phi phi bar, then several things hang together. First of all, you reproduce with this Kähler potential the kinetic energy terms for all the fields present, including a rather non-trivial mixing term between the axion and the brain moduli. Also, as this term was, by the way, written down first by de Wolf and Giddings, also you preserve the no-scale structure. Okay, and finally, there's a third test, which I will come to, which has to do with the fact that the mass I just told you about can be independently calculated just from symmetry grounds when the brain is located in the ADS throat, and that works out too. So that makes us feel that this part of the story is in fact correct, and there's a deeper reason for this having to do with the fact that the axion circle is actually non-trivially fibered over the moduli space for the brain, for the three brain. Okay, so I went through that a bit quickly, but that's the story there. And I just want to quickly give you a feeling for why it is that with that mixing you actually get this mass term. Okay. The reason, roughly speaking, is as follows. You can think of the superpotential. So there are two terms in the potential. Okay, one arises from the superpotential. Another arises because of this tension energy. Okay, the energy which arises from the three brain. And that second term, in a sense, gives you the positive contribution that then drives inflation. So let's think about it like this. The superpotential term just fixes rho. And then let's ask about this term, the anti-brain vacuum energy term. Here's what it looks like. Goes like the tension with this redshift factor I told you about. And it depends like the inverse power of the physical volume. Okay? So now because of this mixing, if we write it in terms of rho and the Kähler potential, it takes this form. we can think of rho being fixed by another term, the superpotential term. And so not surprisingly, if you expand this out for fixed rho star, okay, you get a term which goes like the Kähler potential of phi phi bar, which after making some suitable field redefinition, you can take to be just phi times phi bar. The reason I went through this is that this suggests that if you had not used the anti-brain as the source of positive energy to drive inflation, but you had some other source, okay, as long as you were stabilizing the volume modulus using this superpotential mechanism I told you about, thank you, then you would expect, as long as this additional source of positive energy which drove inflation went like the volume to such some power, okay, could be different from what we had here, but as long as it went like some power, then you would expect a similar story to play out. Okay, so this, the fact that we are finding this mass should be somewhat more general than the precise context in which we saw it arise. Okay, now in the remaining time, let me quickly make a few comments. The first one is that in fact, if the three brain were located in the throat region, okay, remember I told you it could be either up here in the Kalabi-Yau region or in this throat region. Well, if it's in the throat region, there's an independent argument which tells you why the mass must go like this. The moduli which correspond to the brain location are, and this argument comes from ADS-CFT, the brain moduli correspond to conformally coupled scalar fields. And a symmetry argument tells us that when the four-dimensional space-time is curved, the conformally coupled scalar fields must have a mass which is 1/6 times r. So we know that. And that we could have argued even without going through all this detailed song and dance about mixing. But we needed to do that to be able to calculate the mass in the region away from the throat, where I don't think there is such a simple physical, such a simple symmetry argument which tells us the mass. So in terms of a picture, the sort we were drawing earlier, I argued if you had a three brain and it was in the throat, the two forces, gravity and the electric field, cancel. But actually, that's only true when the brain world volume is exactly flat. If it's curved, they don't exactly cancel. And that gives rise to this term in the potential, which gives rise to the mass, which is the mass. OK, so that also hangs together. Now, let me make a few more comments and then conclude. It's always useful to think about things from the viewpoint of effective field theory to clear our heads. You see, no symmetry prevents the appearance of a term like r phi square in the low energy effective Lagrangian. So not surprisingly, in some string, in generic string compactifications, you might expect, not knowing anything else, that such a term would arise. And that is what we are finding here. It would have been nice if the first controlled compactifications we analyzed did not have this term. But we shouldn't be devastated, I think, if we are finding it. Okay. There could be ways around, in non-generic situations, ways around such a mass term. What might some of these ways be? Well, maybe the superpotential in a suitable non-generic situation is different from the one we used. For example, here is the four cycle which was involved in the non-perturbative effect, giving rise to the superpotential, either a seven-brain wrap-set or some Euclidean three-brain wrap-set. Now, if the three-brain which is moving is close to this four cycle, then you have then the strings which stretch from the four cycle to the three brain are light, and that means that the resulting non-perturbative superpotential would in general depend both on rho, okay, which is which governs the size of this four cycle, and on phi, the location of the brain, which governs the mass of these strings. Okay, and one might hope then that if that is the case, then the dependence is more complicated, and in some set of non-generic situations, you could tune the mass to be small enough. Of course, we know this. We could never do this if the three brain was in the ADS throat, just from the symmetry arguments. But maybe we can do it when it's away in the Kalabi-Yau region. Other ways might be if we have, for example, a Kähler stabilization of the volume. So don't use a superpotential. But this is usually hard to control. If it were the case, though, then maybe there is no mixing like this. We directly stabilize the volume, and we can forget about it, and the earlier story plays out with the inflaton just being the separation. Or maybe it's other brains for which this mixing may not arise in some non-generic situations. But again, this is hard to analyze in a controlled manner. So now I do find, just finally, two more comments about this, the mass term and the required fine-tuning. Again, going back to the effective field theory, I do find two encouraging features. First of all, the range of variation for the inflaton field in our model is actually small in Planck units. Okay, you can work it out. If n is the number of e-foldings before the end of inflation, the value of the field in Planck units goes like the overall scale. This is what was 10 to the 14 GeV to the 1/6 power. Okay, and the reason why this is significant is that this determines, from an effective field theory viewpoint, how many terms in the potential you have to tune. Okay, so the potential I told you about earlier was the tension piece, and then a piece which went like 1 over r to the 4. In terms of the normalized field, it is 1 over phi to the 4. Its coefficient actually goes like V0 square, the same term as the overall scale. And you can ask, well, how many terms, if you are going to get corrections, how many terms do you expect to tune? So, well, we saw that you might expect a mass term which goes like V0 times phi square over m Planck square, okay? And then you might think, well, you'll have terms phi fourth, m Planck fourth, and so on and so forth. You can argue because phi is small, okay, only the first term is the one that you need to tune. The second term onwards are automatically too small compared to the 1 over phi 4 term which we want to drive inflation. Okay, and this is a very nice feature. For example, let's contrast it with, say, chaotic inflation for the lambda phi 4 theory. There we know phi has to be much bigger than the Planck scale. That really means you have to be tuning all the non-renormalizable terms that can appear in the potential as corrections to this one. Okay, so here that makes me hopeful that maybe in a suitably non-generic situation we can tune this one term to be small and then we'll be done. Another reason to be hopeful is that there is a nice natural mechanism for reheating in this setup, which has to do with D3, D3 bar annihilation. At the end of inflation, the brain and anti-brain can simply annihilate. And of course, this has to be thought through because it's important where the standard model lies in this setup. But it's possible, again, I said it has to be thought through, it's possible that we can get reheating to work at the end. And the reason I find this encouraging is that quite often in inflation, you wonder whether the couplings to standard model matter will then give rise to the corrections to the potential that will spoil its flatness. Here, you see, this dynamics kicks in only at the very end, when the brain and anti-brain are separated by or out of the string scale. Okay, and you don't think that, and then you get a tachyon and so on, but you don't think any of that is very relevant when the brain is far away. While it's say far away while the 60 foldings are underway, okay. So that's another reason to be encouraged. Okay, let me stop here with concluding. So I think what brain inflation is promising, but the details of moduli stabilization are quite important. Generically, we saw that superpotential stabilization of the volume does not work in that we don't get a slowly enough varying potential for the brain anti-brain separation. But non-generically, maybe it can work. This, of course, is a concrete calculationally addressable question, especially as our technology to compute non-perturbative superpotentials in string theory grows. Okay, it could be one point I should make is that it could be that the resulting inflationary parameters actually depend on the stabilization mechanism. What I mean by this is, you know, this mass term. It could be that in the non-generic setup where the mass term is small, we find that it's small but of the order the 1 over phi to the 4 term that drives inflation. Okay, that's one possibility. Or it could be that it's much too small compared to the 1 over phi 4 term. If it's of the same order, it will affect the inflationary parameters. If it's much smaller, it won't. And we need to get better control on the non-perturbative superpotential and find out what really happens. So among the class of non-generic situations, which one is more generic? All right, and finally, the landscape is here, I believe, for here to stay. It isn't going anywhere. And from that viewpoint, I think the fact that inflation puts a stringent condition requirement is actually a good thing because it can help restrict the number of allowed ground states. Okay, so that maybe is a positive thing. And last of all, I think it's an exciting time because on the one hand we have the bare outlines of the landscape, so we can start thinking about what it means for cosmology. On the other hand, we are developing the calculational tools so we can compute superpotentials and so on and fill out that bare outline quite soon. Thank you.
Everything in terms of four-dimensional theory.
Yes.
the other hand, the underlying picture is extra dimension.
Yes.
So how much you missing when you working in?
Okay, I believe we have tried to control everything in terms of effective field theory in the following way. There are additional, from the viewpoint of the four-dimensional theory, you have extra states, but they're all heavy. So for example, your moduli coming from complex structure deformations, which you can make heavier than the fields we kept here, the volume and the brain-anti-brain separation. And of course, the string modes are heavier. So that's the sense in which I think the effective field theory approximation should be a good one. The corrections to it are small.
But your brains, these three brains, they are curved.
Yes.
Can you use ordinary string theory prescription for the curved brain?
Yes, they're curved, but the curvature is much smaller than the string scale.
Okay, so there is a scale, yes, with the issue of it.
Yes. I mean,
you don't really need this.
He's going to criticize me now.
What I found in this collaboration is that different authors understand different things by the word generic. Because for string theorists, non-generic is a very, very bad word. And for cosmologists to have any possibility of consistent cosmology is so great, that generic or non-generic. Here is how it sounds in this case. We have found that you need a fine-tuning at approximately 1%. So roughly speaking, if you have a set of possible theories, one out of 100 of theories lead to a successful inflation. Well, maybe one out of 1,000. What happens with all others, 999? Well, they do not create any place where humans could live, so just forget about them. So if you have a lot of possible vacuum states where this you just cut 99% out of them and they give you possibility of inflation, this is not that bad, and this is generic enough for cosmologists.
Can I just make one small comment, which is, I see, of course, what you're saying, but I think the important question is the input we put into this compactification is not the mass of the inflaton itself directly, but the fluxes and the Calabi-Yau and so on. So it would be nice to ask, in terms of those input parameters, how non-generic is it to get the small mass, and that will be just useful data.
So I have a very different type of question. Is there a way to heuristically understand why fluxes stabilize the shape moduli as opposed to the volume moduli? Because naively I would expect more that the fluxes could stabilize volume moduli but not shape moduli. So is there a way to understand that?
Is there a way? Let's see. Maybe someone else has a better...
So it's specific to type 2b.
Will you settle for the dilaton if I told you why it stabilized the dilaton, which in a sense, well, you have two terms which scale differently with the dilaton. I mean, you have two kinds of fluxes in the story, and the Lagrangian looks like 1 upon g string square times this minus 1 upon g string times f. And they scale differently with G-strings. So if you take appropriately related H's and F's, you think you'll just trade the balance each other, and you will stabilize them. You get a potential like that. But it's sort of similar for shapes. It's sort of similar for shapes where you have the fluxes are fixed in terms of integers because they are quantized. And then you have to vary, that's very important. So you have to fix them in that fashion, and then you allow the shape moduli to vary, and you find that again, you fix them. Maybe I can think of a better answer.
So I actually have two questions.
Okay.
Tom's looking at his watch. So one question is, you said that symmetries don't prevent R phi squared. But symmetries also don't prevent just phi squared. So why didn't you have to worry about that?
Okay, I mean, you have a model which preserves supersymmetry.
Yeah.
And so the corrections to the leading answer you'll get will be proportional to the supersymmetry breaking in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the supersymmetry breaking is encoded in the fact that you have a curvature. Okay. Which is, you know, you have a positive cosmological constant. So that's why we are getting the correction proportional to our curvature. And that's why I think if you got a phi to the 4 term, that would also be multiplied by the positive cosmological constant itself.
Okay. And the other question I had was, you said that you have a holographic interpretation for what was going on, and I actually didn't see it, so I'd like to...
Okay, so the idea is, if you actually had ADS5, if you actually had this throat going forever, is first, so you actually have ADS5 cross S5, then you know that the dynamics of all the modes down the throat is actually equivalent to... actually, Juan should be answering this question, as he showed us, is actually equivalent to a dual gauge theory description. And you can ask, if you have a three brain and you move it, that modulus, in this dual description of the gauge theory, what is that modulus? And it turns out that it's a scalar field phi, and that scalar field is conformally coupled. Okay. The anti-three brain is not really a modulus because, you know, the light... I meant that the modulus which corresponds to the three brain is a conformally coupled scalar field. So think of it like this: the anti-brain experiences a very big force in the setup, so it very quickly settles. And the slow degree of freedom that will be the inflaton is actually the D3 brain, and so its mass is the one we are interested in calculating, and that is a conformally coupled scalar.
So if it turned out you had to have a much lower scale of inflation, I mean, maybe it's just not your model, but is there an obvious thing to twiddle to change that? It seems like it's very robust. I mean, I guess the most immediate thing is you don't get fluctuations if the scale is lower, or they're not big enough.
So you're saying, can we make the scale a little higher?
Lower, and, or lower.
You want it even lower? Yeah. Well, that you could, I'm not sure I understand. So you have this relation we had between delta H and the scale. I think it was once, I forget what it was. Some power here, and number of e-foldings, some modest power. So you're saying, so certainly you could make this lower, and then of course these fluctuations would be too small to be interesting. But you're saying, can you keep this fixed and lower that?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's at least in this setup. Okay, not in exactly this, not in this model. Maybe in
the class, more general class, model you can make it stuff.
These models are over the general type of fabric inflation. So with fabric inflation, you can have very, very low energy density and still large vapor overall inflation.
But at least in this model, I don't.
There's another question over here.
Have you looked at intersecting brain models where the intersection angle breaks supersymmetry and how that can generate inflation perhaps?
Well, we thought about them a little bit, but I don't have a control model there where I can stabilize all the moduli and make sure the required masses are for the inflaton is small enough. I think it will, generically, my feeling is it will have the same kind of problems we had here. But I can't say I've fully investigated it. I can tell you a little bit more why I think generically there might be some problems.
Well, I have
a
partial answer to this question. I'm working now on stabilization of D3, D7 model. And it seems that exactly this issue of how to make non-appearance of the mass of the inflaton coming from symmetry seems to work there. So because what we did in this case, this fine-tuning, which Andre was discussing, which we need kind of 1%, it is not coming from any symmetry. And so Tai made recently a suggestion that probably when we want to make stabilization, we want to keep like a Goldstone mode. So when we had two brains, without stabilization, they would move without any cost of energy. We should do the same when we do the volume stabilization. So it should be some symmetry which supports simultaneously the volume stabilization and non-appearance of the mass of the inflaton. And it seems to be the one in case on which I'm working now.
I see. I mean, with the seven brain, you won't have the warp factor to suppress things. You can still control everything, I guess.
Can control it. But because of skin, produce.
Okay. We'll have one last question.
Since this is supposed to be a string theory, and supersymmetry is broken, can you tell me which quantity you're computing? I was taught by some of my teachers that you're supposed to calculate something like an S matrix. Well, so what quantity are we calculating?
I'm working in effective field theory, and I would like to argue that from the viewpoint that we can show that the corrections are small.
Oh, so you but it's an effective under control?
I think so.
Okay.
Maybe there are some effects we haven't thought about. This is possible, but as far as we know, I think it's under control.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Let's thank Sandeep again.
Thank you.